Hello and welcome to the Interfish Podcast, where we bring you the most interesting and compelling seafood news. I'm Drew Cherry, Editor-in-Chief, joined by John Fiorillo, Executive Editor. It's been another busy week in seafood news, and we've got time to talk about a couple of stories on today's podcast. And we're going to start with the piece that John did, actually. I know we're all trying to forget it. We're all really don't want to even think about the C word, COVID. It's been almost 3 years since it took over all of our lives. Every single person and company was impacted in one way or another. And I think we're all trying to get beyond it. We're all looking forward to returning to the office, returning to travel, and just in general seeing our lives kind of resume a bit. That said, it's changed the world forever and in many, many, many ways. And certainly we're now beginning to see just how much it changed the seafood industry and companies in the sector that were there right in the middle of it. So, John, tell us about the story that you wrote this week about Randy Rhodes.
Yeah, so for those who don't know Randy, he's been in this industry for, well, I guess 39, 40 years, something like that, he told me. Last 15, he's been the CEO at Harvest Select, which is a U.S. catfish processor in Alabama, one of the bigger players in catfish farming in the country. And he and I were talking, and I started to hear from him some of the struggles he's been under for the last few years related largely to COVID. And I thought it was a really interesting story because I know there are more stories out there among seafood executives and seafood companies that probably people aren't aware of. The dire situation a lot of companies face, the extraordinary challenges and the extraordinary ability to meet these challenges, keep the companies moving and in business. So, you know, if anybody has their own story, certainly ring me up. I'd love to talk to you about it. But in Randy's case, it boiled down largely to an inability to keep people in the plant and attract any people to the plant. Harvest Select is in, I think Randy said, the third poorest county in the state of Alabama. So the labor force, it's only 200,000 people, I think he told me. So there's not a big labor force to choose from. So right away you've got problems. And so, you know, people were leaving, people weren't coming back. He was trying to make things as safe as possible for people, and that proved very difficult. So in the end, there was a day in March of 2021 where he was prepared to call the ownership of his company and tell them, we're shutting down. We can't keep the plant running. We have virtually no inventory to sell. We've cut back our customer base, which stretched from California to Florida, so it's basically nationwide. We've cut it back, and there's no choice. So he was getting ready to make that call, but just before he did, he made one other call to an acquaintance of his. And the person didn't even know the idea that they were dropping on him, but they gave him this idea of reopening a shuttered plant that they have in Mobile, Alabama, which a much bigger city. I'm sorry, not Mobile, Birmingham, much bigger city, 500,000 people versus I said 200,000 for where they are currently, but it's only 2,000. So he's looking at gene pool, 500,000 versus 2,000. Could they get the plant open quickly and start, you know, processing there? Certainly, it was a challenge, but they had it open within a month. And the rest of the story turns out to be a good story, and they're still in business. And, you know, I'm sure he's breathing a sigh of relief, as are many of his employees.
Yeah, it was a great story. I think it's not a unique issue, is it, that there is a challenge getting workers for the seafood industry? And I think as the conversation shifted during COVID during the Ukraine, the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, which is now exactly 1 year ago, there was discussion of reshoring, meaning bringing processing work back to the countries where the fish is caught, and moving them away from China, where the majority of a lot of the fish that is that Westerners anyway find in their plate is processed. Now the challenge has been just what Randy was discussing in your piece, John, which is where are you going to find the workers? So without intense automation, which will come eventually, but without that, you're still going to need workers. You're still going to need people to get on the processing line, to cut those fish, to stand in a cold facility and be wet and smelling. And it is not a job that a lot of people want to have, for obvious reasons. It's not an easy job. It's a lot of labor, and it's not something a lot of people end up making careers out of. And that's why so many of the laborers that you see, whether it's Alaska or in the UK or in Norway or wherever you might go, are coming from other countries. That being said, that it's still a problem. It's still a challenge right now to get workers, and it can be for a number of reasons. It can be for visas. In the U.S., it's been difficult to get the visas for workers to come in and process fish. Canada's had some similar issues. In the U.K., you have Brexit, which has caused all kinds of problems with the workers, who many of them in the hub of Grimsby come from Eastern Europe in the European Union. There's all kinds of other problems. And one that was interesting today, our colleague Matthew Wilcox wrote a story about this today, and it's something we'll cover more because it's getting kind of dire, is that in Scotland, in the UK, where the UK salmon farming industry is situated, these are very remote rural communities, and they're experiencing the same inflation everybody else is around the world, but it's quite different when there's inflation in, say, a bigger city versus these rural communities, where you also are dealing with high costs of fuel and food. And it's really beginning to hurt some of these coastal operations, because they want to maintain their farms and operations there. They can't get the workers to do it, because the workers don't have any place to live, it's too expensive, etc. So it's really an interesting time for labor, not only inflation and not only turnover, but just in general, there's a lot of factors now that are making it more and more difficult, I think, for the seafood industry to get the labor it needs.
Well, yeah, and in the story that you mentioned, I want everybody to wrap their head around this a little bit. The home prices in this rural coastal area where we're talking about in Scotland rose by as much as 168%. So think about what that does to a home price. But, you know, and it is very stark in the sense of Randy's case, where he actually, you know, they brought in foreign workers, of course, but he actually got workers through prison work release programs. And those are extremely helpful. I mean, these are inmates, for lack of a better word, who are on work release. It means they can work a job. They have to be paid the same as any other person working that job. And then they go back to the prison when at night or whenever they're done or whatever. So, I mean, that's pretty dramatic. And but it's not just at the plant level. That's the funny thing, because I talked to a major processor of Alaska seafood back a little while ago, and he was saying that this problem is throughout the company, in the sense that, salespeople, for example, are in great demand, so they're almost it's almost an auction for good sales people. So they stay for a little while, then they get tapped for a little bit more pay, and then they flee. And it also goes up to the tech part of the business, where we'll take land base, for example. Very hard to find labor with this technology background and this skill set. So I think your point's a good one. I think it doesn't get talked about a lot, but I think the labor situation in seafood there's some very big challenges with it throughout the company, from, as I just said, from the very plant level, workers in the plant, to the executive level to a large degree.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the solution, or maybe the solution is the wrong word, the inevitability, the inevitable is automation and digitalization and AI. I'm sure you've been reading all over about chatbot and about Microsoft's new AI system for that's almost sentient, or at least it kind of thinks it is. I don't know. Anyway, we're at the beginning, and I think, we're wringing our hands about what all this means, and it's all gonna be fine. I don't think the robots are gonna take over, in terms of enslaving humanity, but they will be taking over jobs. And I think we really saw that as part of the as part of COVID. You're absolutely right, John. It went up and down the chain, and I mean, people realize, wait a minute, wait a minute. We've been sending the Boston Seafood Show, the Barcelona Seafood Show, trade show, trade show, trade show, trade show. There's been tons and tons and tons and tons. And they're important, it's important to meet with people face to face. It's an important part of doing any job, whether it's journalism or selling cod, right? But I think what many companies realized was, okay, we've got all of these saleswomen and men on the floor, running around for 4 days. Talking to, we think, clients that need to be spoken to in person. The ROI was quite unclear, I think, when people didn't go to the shows and they kind of looked around and thought, this new CRM system we just put in place is actually doing a better job than, whatever, Joe Smith or whatever. So a lot of that has been occurring and will continue to occur. But like so many things, the seafood industry tends to lag a bit behind on some of these things. I think less so in areas like aquaculture, for example, salmon aquaculture, where there's been a lot of embrace of technology to streamline operations. And certainly with logistics and inventory management, I think there's been a lot of investments there. But I do think that this is going to be a really interesting era. And I think there's going to be companies that will, like Harvest Select, maybe make that jump or not able to make that jump. And it's all going to depend, I think, on how prepared people are to make investments in technology. It's not cheap to put in place all these systems. You do have to do retraining, and yeah, you can just sort of see these changes. Like you said, John, there's been so much turnover in sales and marketing. You know, people that you've seen around for years and years and years in sales and have done great work at their companies. They've become kind of free agents, and so maybe some of that is poaching, but I would guess a good lot of it is somebody being told, you know what, we're actually going to be able to do your job and another job with this one person, so we don't need this position anymore. I'm thinking of movie, you know, when they put out their earnings, I mean, they made 1 billion euros in operating profit, I think, something around there. They did okay last year, we'll put it that way.
Yeah, I think so.
But what was interesting, what was very, very interesting, is our colleague Anders Furuset, he wrote, he was at the earnings presentation, or listened in on the earnings presentation. And here was what really stuck out to me was, okay, you had these massive earnings, and yet the CEO, Ivan Vindheim, said they are going to drop another 435 positions this year. They have dropped 1,346 positions since 2019. So we're talking about by the end of this year, if this all bears out, you're looking at almost 2,000 less jobs at Mowi since 2019. The world's largest salmon farming company, a company that has grown and grown and grown and grown. So one would think, oh yeah, you need more staff, you need to build up, you know, you have to get more salespeople and get more people on the farms, get more people for logistics, for all da da da, all the things that you need to run a company of that size. Not so. And here's the interesting thing. Now, whether or not this is true, I mean, you have to tell your shareholders the truth, but I guess I just find this unbelievable that this is the case, but these are not coming from layoffs. And Vindheim said this is not about we're these are not layoffs. These 400 jobs that we're going to lose. Now, I mean, somebody's losing something, right? But they're actually a part of running the company with fewer people more efficiently. You know, and again, you would think, wow, okay, this is a company that is making a lot of money. You know, more money than any other company in seafood, by far. But they're saying, you know, we actually don't need as many people to do this as we thought. Let's run a really, really skinny operation, see if we can do this with 2,000 fewer people. And you know what? I mean, the proof is in the earnings, I guess. You know, 1 billion euros. So obviously, salmon prices and the market is driving that. But at the same time, you think on the cost perspective, on the cost side, that still has an enormous impact. Your number one cost is always going to be human capital. You know, in aquaculture, feed and human capital are the two biggest costs. So it's very interesting to see how all these shifts are taking place in the industry.
Well, and I think, you know, to have an honest discussion about this, we have to talk about what I'll just term now because I can't think of anything better, the COVID worker. And by that, I mean, you know, when COVID hit, offices closed or temporarily shut down, and people started working from home. Some people, a lot of people, decided they didn't want to work at all. And I don't understand that. I talked to a lot of CEOs who are just as perplexed as anybody else about how the people could drop completely out of the workforce. And certainly we know there was government assistance and all that, but a lot of that now has gone away. So will these people be back looking for work? Will they expect not to go back to an office? Will they? You know, it's just really interesting to me what the modern worker, how they see their role these days in offices. And I'm not just talking seafood. I, you know, I've got friends in many industries, and I'm trying not to be a jerk about this, but I don't understand the level of expectation that people come into companies with these days. And I don't know. I just think I don't know what I'm trying to say exactly. What I'm trying to say, I
I'm
think,
just
is
giving you enough rope to just
I
hang yourself,
know,
John.
I
I'm just
know.
sitting here listening
You
so that I
know,
can jump in with a joke about how you're getting old. That's what I'm
well,
doing.
no, because I bet CEOs who listen to this will know exactly what I'm trying to say. But I'm not doing a good job of it. But I just think the workers has changed. I'll just put it that way. I think the classic old work ethic, you pay your dues, you work your way up, I think that has been dismantled and rebuilt in an entirely different outlook. And I blame a lot of it on COVID. I think COVID taught us I taught us things that probably aren't beneficial long term as far as what a worker needs to do. So before I say any more, I guess just go ahead, smack me around. I'm ready for you.
No, I actually won't. I guess the I think it accelerated trends that were already happening with as a new generation entered the workforce. And as you said, I think the expectations, the demands from an employer are vastly different than boomers and even Gen X. It now is the power differential, the power balance has shifted a bit, but I think that there was expectation that was going to that it should have been shifting more. So I think COVID sort of did help accelerate that a bit by people being able to point out, hey, I got my job done being working at home and having this hybrid situation. I it that disrupts that disrupts a structure, a management structure that's been in place for decades, and I think that whether you like it or not, I think that has changed permanently. And so I think the way that the sort of the IBM style of, showing up with your briefcase and was it the men in gray suits or whatever the phrase is about that, coming in, working, getting your gold watch, that is gone. And I think now we're in this area where, what does that mean? What do workers expect? Is it just going to be paying more wage inflation? Is it going to be more benefits, hybrid? I mean, it's so fascinating because on the one hand, you're seeing companies say, you know what, we want butts in seats 3 days a week, full stop. A lot of big companies are doing that right now. When the big companies do it, all the little ones tend to follow and say, well, this is the way it should be. And then on the other side of that, you're also having this movement toward, again, toward hybrid. There is a lot of discussion about 4 day work weeks. And that seems crazy, I think, to many of us that are of a certain age. But then again, we didn't used to have weekends, and so at some point somebody said, "What? Only working 5 days a week, or only working six except on Sundays or whatever it might have been." But I think that, my point is that it's going to change no matter what. So the question is not, is it changing, right? It's changing. The question now is it going to change back? I think not. And so now employers have to be looking and thinking, okay, so what do we then do in this new world?
Well, and I totally agree with that. I think it's been a permanent shift. I mean, full disclosure, I worked in an office until COVID. I worked in our Seattle office. We closed it, and we're not going to reopen it. I work from home now, so do you. So do most of our staff. Some of the London staff. It's a hybrid situation, but. Yeah, I don't think it's going back by any means, but I will say it has been, and now will continue to be a bigger and bigger challenge in seafood for sure. Because seafood doesn't it's not a 9 to 5 job. We all know that when you're moving fish, importing it, processing it. I mean. The hours are insane. Fishermen in Bristol Bay, for example, it's not a great example, but they'll fish for 3 days without sleep. I mean, seafood is different. And I think it presents even larger challenges to the CEOs at these companies from a staffing perspective, from a retention perspective, to be able to retain the workers. And so, it's a long way of saying Randy's challenges are not unique. He knew that, or he knows that. Certainly, we all know that. And I'm sure CEOs in companies throughout this industry have similar stories. I'd love to hear them. Give me a shout. But yeah, we're in this post-COVID era of labor, which. We're trying to figure out what it's going to look like.
Well, hey, let's wrap it up there. Remember that you can find our news 24/7 on intrafish.com. And don't forget, we have the Boston Seafood Show coming up. Prior to that, actually, we have the North Atlantic Seafood Forum in Bergen, and myself and members of the Intrafish team will be there. So drop us a line or track us down. We'd love to hear story ideas, tips, etc. And in Boston, you can join us on March 13th at our Seafood Leadership Breakfast. We're going to have a great lineup of speakers. We have American Seafoods, we have Red Lobster, we have Seafood Exchange, Silver Bay Seafoods, DNB. It's going to be a fantastic lineup. You're not going to want to miss it. It's always some of the best networking around. And again, great speakers and great panel discussions. Thanks everyone for joining us. We'll talk to you next time.